Hi, and welcome back to Undisclosed, our weekly unfiltered episode. Rabia here. I'm here, as always, with my colleagues, Mithal and Colin. Hey, guys.
Hello, hello.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well.
Today, I'm Mithal. I'm not high, although I was almost high Mithal.
High Mithal. Okay, you know, high Mithal would have worked, but I'm glad you got the name to be changed on your recording screen, so I know who you are.
I corrected myself.
I would never have known otherwise, Mithal.
No doubt.
Mithal and I were just exchanging our Mother's Day stories. We hope all of you out there, all you moms, all you people who are mothers, caretakers, aunts, anything mothering adjacent, had a wonderful day and felt loved and celebrated. Since Mithal and I got to spend most of our day by ourselves without our children, it was fantastic. All right. So a little heads up before we get into our stories this week, and that is that this will be the last unfiltered we do for a couple of months. Now, no need to panic. That is because next week we're going to be completely dark. But then the week after, the new season of Undisclosed begins. You will hear next week, though, in our feed, you'll hear our trailers for our upcoming season. So we won't reveal what that season is yet. But once the season starts, you will be still getting Thursday episodes, but they will be our addendum episodes. Remember those guys?
Good old days.
Yeah. So you're going to be on your own until that season runs in terms of keeping up with the news and criminal justice, true crime, and the law. And I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about on that front when we are back out of the season over the summer sometime. All right. So how about this week we start off with Colin to get our mental juices flowing?
Yeah. And in terms of that, we have another Fourth Amendment reasonable expectation of privacy case. And so this is in October of 2021. It's just before midnight. We have three police officers and they arrive at this motel in Oklahoma City. They're looking for a man who had violently carjacked and kidnapped a woman in that same motel parking lot. Now, luckily, the woman had escaped and the carjacker gave up the attempts to steal the car. And so there's no impending threat at the time the police officers arrive. But they go to the front desk after speaking to the woman who was attacked. They relay the description of the features and the clothes that the carjacker was wearing. And the hotel manager says that meets the description of a man staying in room 231. And so then the court, in assessing what happened, gives this description of the motel. They said the motel was a three-story building with rooms arranged in a rectangle around a central courtyard. Rooms were accessible only from the open-air walkways around that courtyard. Room 231, as you might know from the number two, was a second-floor unit, and it was at the end of one of the walkways. That walkway extends a few feet past the front door to the motel room, and it faces a perpendicular walkway. In that area, we have one of the room's windows, and above an air conditioning unit, it overlooks the extension. And so there's this short railing that encloses the two sides of the extension, and the room could be accessed from the parking lot from this outdoor staircase. And in this opinion by the United States Court of Appeals for the 10th Circuit, they include some photos I'll post on social media of what it looked like outside this motel room. Long story short, we have this officer, Officer Michael McNally, and he looks at the curtains in the window leading into the motel room above the air conditioning unit. And he sees there's about a 1-inch gap in the curtains. And so he puts his face right up to the gap, and he's able to see on the bed a man who matches the description given by the motel manager and the woman attacked. And so officers then knock and announce their presence. There's this standoff that ensues. Eventually, the defendant is apprehended and he is prosecuted in connection with the attempted carjacking. So the question becomes, was this a search in violation of the Fourth Amendment, right? So if we go back to Fourth Amendment from our discussions earlier, in order to conduct a search, whether it be of a home or of a motel room, you typically need a search warrant or you need exigent circumstances. In this case, there was no search warrant that was obtained. And the question then becomes, exigent circumstances? No. There
really?
Was no hot pursuit.
Okay.
The woman had escaped. This case gets appealed up to the United States Court of Appeals for the 10th Circuit, and they say, we're going to apply the plain view doctrine.
Right.
An exception to the warrant requirement. If you're in a place you're authorized to be, in this case, the police officer, and you're able to see something in plain view, you don't need a warrant. And if you're able to see something that would prompt you to believe this person had committed a crime, then they're allowed to knock and announce, enter, etc. And so this defendant is convicted. He appeals. And as I noted, his case goes up to the 10th Circuit, which covers states such as Oklahoma. And a majority of the court agrees with the logic that is set forth. They say because the officer's feet were planted on this walkway in a place he was allowed to be, and he was able to see through the crack in the curtains, it was plain view, and this search did not violate the Fourth Amendment rights of the defendant. We have a dissenting opinion by Judge Moritz, and here's how he sets it up. Imagine you're taking a road trip along Route 66. Weary after a day of driving, you check into a motel and finally get to your room, your home away from home. You drop your bag, shut and lock the door, draw the curtains, begin to change out of your dusty travel clothes. But you stop, alarmed, when you notice an eye peering through the small gap you unknowingly left between the curtains. Seeing an eye pressed up to a one-inch gap in the drapes would inspire most of us to, well, call the police. But according to the majority, that instinct is irrational because you have no reasonable expectation of privacy in your motel room under these circumstances. He goes on to write, this court has missed its opportunity to correct a significant and unwarranted erosion of Fourth Amendment protections. The officer in this case placed his face so close to a motel room's window, he could peer through a one-inch gap in the curtains and view the entire room. According to the court, this rendered the entire motel room in plain view because the officer's feet were located in a public walkway and he used only his unaided sentences. But individuals who close their curtains have an objective, reasonable expectation of privacy and what lies behind them. That there was a one-inch gap between the curtains here is by no means determinative. Who among us has not struggled to get curtains perfectly closed? And so that was the 10th Circuit. There was a three-judge, two judges finding this was constitutional, the dissent finding it was not. And then just last week, they attempt to have a rehearing in the 10th Circuit, and they cite the peeping Tom laws that ban people from peeping into your windows when you're undressing, etc. And
wait, the defense raises that?
The defense raises that.
Okay.
And the court declines to change the ruling, saying these peeping Tom statutes require trespass. And in this case, the police officers were in a public space. They weren't trespassing. And so this is my question to the two of you. What is your take on this ruling? Is it fair game that you have a little crack in your blinds or your curtains? We're okay with a police officer peering in into your motel room or hotel room. Is that a good ruling, or did the dissent get this right?
I'm with the majority on this one.
I agree.
Okay, and what's your reasoning?
Well, first of all, yes, it might be a little bit of a struggle to get your curtains closed, but you can get them closed.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, it doesn't seem much different than if a police officer is walking past, let's say, a car or a shop window or anything else that maybe has, you know, maybe a shop window has blinds, but that person did not close the blinds. Like, I don't. That's how plain view doctrine works, generally speaking. Like, it doesn't have to be like right in front. There can be a glass between you. There's still plain view. On top of which, I mean, there was already like, it's not like he looked in and saw something that did not match the description, right? Like of what he was. I don't know. It feels like it falls pretty squarely within this doctrine, this exception to the warrant requirement.
Plus, he was pointed to that room. Right.
That's the other thing. He was going to knock on that door regardless. Right. There's that. So I don't know. What do you think, Mito?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, especially because he was going to go there. Now, had that one inch been covered, maybe he still would have knocked and still would have tried to engage. Right. But
of course he would have.
The fact that he didn't need to do that because he could take a little peek.
Mm-hmm. I wonder more about that, about the legality of him being of the clerk saying, yeah, it's this room over here.
True. Which gets to the whole, you know, is there a duty owed to the customer? So let me ask the follow-up then, if you're both comfortable with the police officer doing this.
Oh, God, here's where it gets hard. Okay.
Well, there was the analogy of the peeping Tom laws, right? And they say, okay, this would not be prohibited for another hotel guest to peep in because those laws only prohibit you trespassing and peeping. In this case, another hotel guest could walk up to the curtains, see them slightly drawn, look into the hotel room and, you know, see someone naked, etc.
I hate to tell people, but people do that all the time. They do it all the
time. They do it, but should that be illegal or not? Do you think the peeping Tom laws should cover the other hotel guest walking up to a neighboring unit and peeking between the curtains in this one-inch gap and seeing you naked in your hotel room? Should that be illegal or beyond the scope of the law.
I still don't think there's any trespass there.
Mm-hmm. Right? There's not, in terms of a physical trespass. Right?
I mean, I can't, you know how many times, there are so many times I've been at these, one of these kinds of, it's usually like a motel situation, and I look up and there's like some kid with his nose pressed up against the glass. I mean, like, that comes with the territory, so I don't think that they can apply the Pipping Tom laws in that situation either. I mean, like, I don't know. What do you think, Rachel?
To your point, yes, there's people that are maybe not even intentionally like in a Peeping Tom situation, but if a blind is open, a curtain is open, I think naturally people just tend to look just to see, right? Now, yeah.
I do. If I'm walking past
looking,
it, it's open,
right? You're not necessarily
look.
Trying to look for somebody or something specific. You're just glancing around.
Yeah.
But I mean, Colin's point, if I'm stripped down naked, about to take a shower, and somebody looks at me, I'm not going to like that too much, right? Like,
well, let me then from that ask one final question,
oh,
which is
he
something
like
that's developed
answers.
Over the past decade or so, which are upskirt laws, right?
Oh, come on.
Wherein we now have, I mean, you know, someone's riding the subway, they're wearing a skirt, and a dude takes out his iPhone, kind of reaches down and takes the photo upskirt, so to speak. Mm. There are a lot of laws now that ban that practice and say these upskirt laws, even though it's not a physical trespass, it is
a violation
unreasonably
of
intrusive.
Yeah.
And this is a criminal act. Do you support those laws? And if so, is that different in your mind than extending the Peeping Tom?
1,000%. And my legal reasoning is that it's disgusting and pervy.
Yes.
But
well, it's peering into the crack between the curtains in the hotel room.
But here's the thing. No, but Colin, that crack, when you peer in, or if I'm looking over as I'm walking past, it could be a completely empty room.
Could be.
It could be somebody just asleep. It could be like somebody watching television. Like, but when somebody is taking out a phone and doing an upskirt, like that's very specifically, there is something that they're trying to capture, something that like they have no right to capture. Whereas now, if somebody walks past one of these rooms and the curtains close and they peep in to see like, oh, is somebody in that room or just whatever. And then they see people in a state of undress or whatever. And then they take out their phone. You know what I mean? That's
when it becomes the privacy issue, right? Because I'm naked or I'm getting busy or whatever is happening, right? But if I'm just standing.
Yeah. Now, if they continue to stand there and stare.
Creepy.
Yeah, you know, that could be a problem. But no, I just think that's a whole different realm, like what you're talking about. I think the people... No, okay, now, Colin, I know, it seems like you think we're wrong, so I want to hear what the right answer is.
I don't... And this is kind of what the majority gets to. When they're talking about this defendant, they're saying, this is what he thinks the law should be. But we don't deal in what the law should be.
Right.
Here is what the Fourth Amendment covers. And they say to a lot of other cases where courts have found this doesn't violate the Fourth Amendment. I agree with the majority from a precedential position in terms of courts have not found this. I would ban all three of these. I would not allow the police officer to peep in. I would not allow the other hotel guests to peep in. I would ban the upskirt photos, et cetera.
I have a question for you, Colin. Here's my hypothetical. Let's say it's not an inch gap. Let's say that you've got a window that's like 2 feet across and they have it halfway open. Then what?
I think that's fundamentally different from having to get your eye up right to the glass to see in this 1-inch gap. I think that's, in my mind, fundamentally different.
Okay. I mean, do you think intent is, because it's like an intent thing, like you think the intent's different? Like the person going up and putting their eye against them, they're trying to intrude on somebody's privacy versus... If it's wide
open. Well, I would
open.
Say to the point you just made, Rabia, in terms of the reasonable expectation of privacy, if I go into my motel and don't make any attempts to close the curtain, I would not have a reasonable expectation of privacy. People walking in front could see into my room. If I make that attempt and come pretty close to closing the curtain, I don't know what exactly the gap would have to be, but if I'm manifesting an intent to close my room off from the public eye, I would feel like I have a reasonable expectation of privacy. What's something funny or concerning that your dog's been doing lately that you originally brushed off? Scratching? Licking their paws? Shaking their head? When did you realize it wasn't just quirky dog behavior and something was actually going on? With the dogs I've had throughout my life, I've seen it all. Including not wanting to play, patchy skin, and poor digestion. These are not normal dog behaviors. They're actually signs of allergies. What I learned is that allergies in dogs often start in the gut. when things get out of balance internally, it can show up everywhere. And issues with their skin, their ears, their digestion, even their energy. Just like us, dogs need good bacteria to strengthen their gut health and calm an overactive immune system. That's what led me to Better Wild Allergy Relief Soft Chews. They're designed to support your pet's allergy defenses by strengthening digestion and helping restore balance from the inside. They're the first and only chews with ancestral advantage, wolf probiotics, and natural ingredients proven to help reduce itching and support gut, immune, and skin health. So instead of just covering things up, you're actually supporting your dog at the source. With Better Wild Allergy Relief Soft Chews, like me, you can feel confident and secure knowing you're looking out for your dog's health. Better Wild is committed to helping your dogs with clinically proven, veterinarian-approved solutions that you can feel great about. And right now, Better Wild is offering our listeners up to 40% off your order at betterwild.com/justice. That's betterwild.com/justice for up to 40% off your order. betterwild.com/justice.
All right. So, personal scenario. In my master bathroom, right, I have the vanities and stuff, then there's a soaking tub, and then there's a window that faces the street. And This is an intersection, right? I mean, it's a little suburban neighborhood, so it's not like it's a busy street, but this is, a lot of cars are passing around. People are walking their dog, right? If I leave my window open, my blinds open, they 100%, somebody can look up and see exactly what I'm doing standing around. Maybe I just got out of the shower, I'm not dressed yet, whatever. So I always kind of close it, but I also kind of want to like have a little bit of light. So I leave like the last inch or two open. Now, If somebody wanted to, they could easily still stand outside on that corner and look up and get out some binoculars if they wanted, or just really just stand. You know how it is. If it's dark outside and I have the light on in my bathroom, you can still see, right? So I feel like when I do that, I'm always making the calculation. There could be somebody standing outside in the dark and looking at me through those 2 inches I have left out of my blinds. And it's a pain to open and close them because it's on the other side of this big old soaking tub. I got to reach over. So I just kind of leave it. And I'm like, well, if they get 2 inches of me, then they get 2 inches of me. Like, I've just kind of like expected that it's possible.
Well, this is interesting, Robbie, because you mentioned the possible use of binoculars. And obviously, this person would be at some distance. So this was an argument raised by the defendant in this case. This is the Watkins case, by the way, for people to look it up. They say defendant argues that permitting this kind of late night peeping would invite much mischief, paving the way for the government to deploy an army of drones to hover outside the windows of any hotel or motel in the nation in the middle of the night. We do not share that fear. Spying by drones, of course, is not a use of the unaided senses. And so they draw this distinction, which the Supreme Court has done itself, of unaided peeping versus aided peeping. And so the binoculars would be aided peeping. Mm-hmm. If it's just someone on the street corner looking into your window, they would say that's kosher.
That's kosher, right? Because they're on the street. You guys, if you enjoy this, this is what law school is like. So go to law school. Specifically, Collins Law School.
The difference is between that 1 and 2 inches, Robbie. That's it.
I know. But I'm just like, look, I want to see a little more of the, like, I wish I could just keep it wide open because I love seeing the trees and I love seeing the outdoors. But I'm like, well, then the world gets to see me. So it's not going to work like
that. There's some treatments you can get where you can look out, but it's a mirror from the outside.
Tint your windows.
What?
Yeah. I'll send you a link. We did that.
That's what we have in the garage.
Oh, I'll take a look into that. That's a take. Okay. I'll take a look into that. Anyway, it's interesting though, Colin, that you would ban all of this. I guess Mithil and I, are we Republicans? Is that what's going on here?
Well, let's say the Fourth Amendment is very much bipartisan because a lot of the originalists and the conservative justices speak about, you know, wanting to have this sense of privacy and autonomy. So it's not a partisan issue, really.
Yeah. All right. But you are definitely have, I'm not saying I would be against it. But as you, like you said, as the law stands now, I don't think that there was any, I don't think the police violated the law, basically, at this point. Yeah.
Out here, if you're doing nothing, you're doing everything right. Though on a cruise with Norwegian, even if you're doing nothing, you're still basking in the warm sun, enjoying the peaceful ocean waves, you're breathing. Don't forget about breathing. Definitely need to be breathing. So you get to do nothing, or everything, but you still need to be breathing. It's like really important.
Experience the difference with cruises to Alaska, the Caribbean, and Europe. Norwegian Cruise Line. It's different out here. Visit ncl.com, call your travel advisor, or 1-888-NCL-CRUISE. Norwegian Cruise Line ships registry the Bahamas and USA.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
All right, Mito, let's pass this on to you then. What do you got for us this week?
Yeah, I was going to take it anyways.
Okay.
since we're talking about privacy, okay. I'll hop
any
in.
Any updates, by the way, on the Guthrie case?
No.
Okay.
We're waiting on the FBI to test the DNA that they finally got from the private lab in Florida.
Okay.
You would think it would already be done because
urgency here. Okay. Mm-hmm.
But no.
Savannah Guthrie is hosting the new game show version of Wordle. That was announced.
Interesting. Huh. I saw that she posted something for Mother's Day, you know.
Oh, that's sad.
In memory of her mom, but just saying we're still waiting for you, essentially. But no, nothing else. Okay, so my case is about the ACLU representing a Canadian citizen. Do you guys know anything about this?
Nope.
All right. So this Canadian citizen has filed a lawsuit against the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. the DHS allegedly issued an administrative subpoena to Google demanding personal information about this citizen, Mr. John Doe. They wanted all kinds of information, his name, address, location data, credit card, bank account numbers. Not sure why they need all that, but no reason was given, you know, as to why he's under investigation by the DHS, but they cited the Tariff Act of 1930.
What?
Yeah, which, you know, that basically just ensures like compliance with basic customs laws, right? But that's odd because Mr. Doe hasn't imported or exported anything from the U.S. between September 2020-25 and Feb 2026, which is the time frame that they want this information on him about. And he hasn't even been in the U.S. for over a decade. So what's this about?
This is interesting. Okay.
According to Mr. Doe, he claims he is being, quote, unlawfully targeted as part of a continued effort, quote, to unmask social media users who criticize the administration. And he doesn't deny, you know, that he regularly posts on social media criticizing the president and his policies and
but
whatnot.
But he's not even in the country.
Right. Exactly.
Okay, I'm in trouble.
And
that's
really why I'm talking about this, to let you know, like, put your back. But so his posts on X, for example, one of them got like over 100,000 views. So his X account is tied to his Google email address. And so that's why and how DHS was able to directly send the subpoena to Google. Google notified Mr. Doe and, you know, when they received the notice, but they haven't complied with the summons yet. Now, I'm sure we've all heard of a bunch of cases, right, of subpoenas that are being sent to all these different tech companies and social media platforms. And sometimes, you know, it's because they're criticizing ICE or tracking agent locations, things like that. And in many cases, the users have challenged DHS in court, or sometimes Meta has actually complied and given them the information they've requested about users, while other times they've completely withdrawn the cases for whatever reason. So it's a mixed bag. But do the same civil liberties and constitutional protections apply to non-U.S. citizens? What do you guys think?
I don't understand anything that's happening in this case, frankly. I don't understand where the tariff stuff comes in. I don't understand how...
Exactly. I mean, that doesn't make sense.
Right.
It seems like basically he had been posting.
Basically, there's an open investigation against him, right? DHS is investigating him. There's been no there's no charges levied against him, or are there charges?
No, he's filed a lawsuit against them, but I don't think Google has given DHS the information yet about him. Yeah, they haven't. And this is just as of.
How did he know they were doing this? Feb. How did he know DHS is doing this?
How did he know DHS was
investigating him?
Oh, because Google told him. When Google got the subpoena, Google notified him saying, hey, heads up. which they do. And sometimes they have given information. Right. In this particular case, they haven't yet. Doesn't mean they won't. Don't know. I guess we'll see.
Okay.
But
it doesn't seem like DHS has a leg to stand on here. I don't know what they're doing. Colin, what do you think?
Well, to Mithil's question, if you're a non-citizen and you're physically present in the United States, you have constitutional rights, including First Amendment protections. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The interesting wrinkle here is this is someone who is outside the U.S., who is criticizing a U.S. citizen, Donald Trump. And the way that's done is, in terms of, you know, personal jurisdiction and a libel or defamation suit or any of that, would be if it's targeted towards a U.S. citizen or causes harm in the U.S., you're subject to the jurisdiction of the U.S. And so I would treat someone in Canada making statements about a U.S. citizen as analogous to a Canadian citizen physically in the U.S. making those statements. It's kind of the same thing in terms of the law and how it treats it. So I would give the same protection as, you know, anyone from Canada visiting the U.S. and being sued based upon what they claim is free speech.
Okay. All right. But what about DHS, like, asking for this information? Do you think this person has... You're saying this person is raising valid, like, free speech protection issues.
Free speech, yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. Okay.
And that was kind of part of what he posted. He's like, you know, that's what I appreciated about America and how, you know, free speech actually is so meaningful and it matters until now, in this case, for him.
I mean, look, I just feel like this opens busts the door wide open for, like, people all around the world. I mean, it can make anybody a target. Okay, so where is the case now? ACLU has filed a suit?
Just recently,
okay,
yeah.
So, and where is that suit filed?
California.
Okay.
It's out of California.
Okay. Interesting.
Okay. That is interesting. This guy's in Canada.
And it's like, it seems like on the one hand that DHS is just like, you know, we're just going to send out all these different subpoenas. We'll see what we get back and do what we can with it.
DHS is on a fishing, whatever. Like, they're fishing for stuff. Yeah. I think this is a test case. I think that I think ACLU is going to use this as a test case to see how this, I don't know how this unfolds all the way up the chain to the U.S. Supreme Court, but I don't have a lot of faith in the U.S. Supreme Court on this kind of issue, especially given, by the way, I mean, one of the stories I was thinking of doing today, or the story, and then I switched gears, was actually about this administration's 2026 counterterrorism they put out their counterterrorism strategy for 2026, the White House did, not too long ago. Have you guys heard about what's up in there? Okay. Well, thought crimes are now a thing. And of the categories of buckets of terrorism that you could potentially be investigated and charged with, one of them is if you are an anti-fascist. Mm-hmm. If you are anti-fascist, you can be charged with terrorism. So you should be fascist, in fact. You should be pro-fascist. So I feel like this is all kind of, I mean, DHS is taking, obviously, their cues from the administration, what they want to shut down. That's a strategy. But I feel like the administration has broad discretion in especially in counterterrorism type of stuff. We've seen it for the last 20 years. So I have a feeling that's going to come up somehow in this. I don't know.
I mean, but it's weird because, you know, sure, we've heard it when it comes to, I'm going to use this kind of information, social media posts, whatever, to deport immigrants, right? This guy, it's not like he's got a green card or anything like that, right? Like, he's a U.S. citizen. He hasn't been here in a decade even to visit. He's a Canadian citizen. So it's just like,
I mean,
I'm sure there's a lot more of John Doe's out there.
Yeah.
Outside of the U.S.
I feel like the long game here is that the U.S., that the administration wants to shut down criticism online and put pressure on these platforms to just, like, delete these accounts, block them, restrict this kind of speech. So I don't know. Interesting case. Interesting times we're living in. Whew. All right. Okay. Well, hopefully we'll have an update. Maybe when on the other side of the season, actually, it'll probably take a lot longer than that. It'll probably be closer towards the end of the year, but I definitely want to circle back to see how that goes and time our departure from this nation.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
So I was going to talk about the counterterrorism strategy because I think it's super alarming, although I'm not surprised at all. And it's exactly where I expected things to go in the last 20 years. And those of us who are working in the space for many years said it's eventually going to be used against people who don't think it's ever going to be used against them. However, I decided instead to pivot to this story because I think there's a sense of urgency here that we had when we talked about when we had Sonny Burton's legal team on the show. So their Alabama governor, Kay Ivey, and we've talked about Governor Ivey before, you know, she commuted the death sentences of both Sonny Burton and Rocky Myers. However, she has scheduled an execution for another person on death row in Alabama, Jeffrey Lee. The thing about this case is this. Jeffrey Lee, he's a black man incarcerated in Alabama, convicted of a 1998 murder. Well, he was robbing a pawn shop and he ended up killing two people there. He shot a third, but she survived. He was convicted on 2 counts of capital murder and 1 count of attempted murder. Now, when he was sentenced, at that time, Alabama allowed judges to impose, to override jury recommendations for life sentences and impose death sentences. It's called judicial override. And historically, there have been 4 states that have allowed this kind of judicial override, Alabama, Delaware, Florida, and Indiana. However, all 4 of them have abolished it, including Alabama. So the question has been before the court in Alabama is that, okay, Mr. Lee was sentenced at a time. The judge overrode the life sentence and gave him a death sentence and contravention and contravening what the jury wanted in this case, that made its way up the courts, especially after in 2017, Alabama outlawed judicial override. So the question is that retroactive or not? And the Alabama Supreme Court decided no, or their maybe it was the Court of Appeal. They decided no, that the death sentence still stands because at the time that sentence was imposed, judicial override was in fact legal. You know, Governor Ivey has gone ahead and scheduled the execution, and the execution is coming up. It is going to happen between the June 11th and June 12th. He will be executed by nitrogen hypoxia, which we have talked about before on this show, I think when we talked about Sonny Burton's execution. An important thing to note in this case is the fact that Jeffrey Lee, and this was raised in his defense at the time of this crime, suffered mental illness. He had had a traumatic brain injury. There is an entire history of kind of his life and everything he went through at the website lifeforjeffreylee.com. I encourage you guys to take a look at it. He was severely physically abused when he was a child. His upbringing was very violent and impoverished. When he was very, very young, at like around 8 years old, he started abusing substances. He started inhaling gasoline. Obviously, that's going to, when you're a child with a developing brain, have a long-term effect. But then on top of that, he had a serious crash when he was young and he had a traumatic brain injury. And after that brain injury, he had a lot of mood changes. I mean, there's a lot of trauma that came with it. He had a lot of neurological damage. And it was after that he committed this robbery that ended up in the tragic deaths of 2 people. So this is, you know, this is a case in which you have somebody who does have some mental illness issues. in which the jury probably decided to give him a life sentence because of those issues, because there was no real question about whether or not he was culpable for the crime. Right. The question was around the sentence itself. So right now, Governor Ivey has not said whether or not she plans to grant clemency, but again, she has scheduled the execution. So it's possible that she could still grant clemency. So I wanted to bring this to our listeners' attention, because you can go to the website Life for Jeffrey Lee. You can do what you did with Sonny Burton's case and ask Governor Ivey to grant him clemency and allow him to live out the rest of his years behind bars. But anyhow, Colin, I wanted you to like chime in on your thoughts on judicial override. And I was surprised that it only existed in 4 states, actually.
Yeah. And so going back to our Rocky Myers series, when we reported on judicial override, some of the findings by the Equal Justice Initiative and our own research are much higher rate of wrongful conviction in judicial override cases than in cases in which the jury was unanimous in the death penalty. Doesn't seem to be the issue here, but that was a big issue. Disproportionately led to people of color having a life sentence overridden by the judge in favor of a death sentence. And then in election years for judges, we disproportionately saw judges overriding life sentence recommendations by the jury to impose the death sentence. And so if this goes forward, and it looks like it will, barring this 11th hour reprieve, I mean, this is what we plan to argue in the Rocky Myers case, was to argue that because judicial override was only ever in 4 jurisdictions and is now gone, his execution can't go forward. And it looks from this like we would have lost. And yet, with Governor Ivey coming in,
right,
she very strongly stated, this looks like it might be a wrongful conviction. In fact, Rocky, as we noted in a prior episode, is appealing based upon his defense counsel being a high-ranking member of the KKK. And so I hate judicial override. I hate that it ever existed. And I think absolutely, whether it's a governor or a court, and this is a case where the jury was 7-5 in favor of life sentence. Hmm. All of those should be commuted to life sentences as opposed to going forward with executions, in my mind.
Do you think this is going to come down on the question of the fact that, I mean, Rocky, you know, I think she obviously believed that he was innocent. I think, with Sonny Burton's case, it wasn't that, though.
It wasn't, but he didn't commit the physical act of killing.
Right.
I think she's probably, I mean, if I had to guess, she's going to draw the line here. That shouldn't stop listeners from reaching out or any efforts by his legal team, et cetera. But I think this is a tougher call for her to make.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure she's aware of the totality of the circumstances, the mitigating factors, you know, his mental health, his condition. And also, I think that's the fact that it seems fundamentally unfair that he has to serve a sentence that was later out, that would later have been like illegal to even impose.
Right.
It's kind of crazy to me. I don't know. It's like let's say he'd been sentenced to death by like firing squad, and later that was outlawed as a method of execution. But the courts were like, well, when you were sentenced, they were allowed, and now we're just going to have to go through with it. It just feels weird in terms of like, I guess maybe my question here is like, I'm trying to unpack how does retroactivity work in situations like this?
Well, we're seeing a similar thing in terms of, in the Ramos case, the Supreme Court said, in terms of the guilt-innocence phase of trial, Oregon and Louisiana were outliers. They didn't require a unanimous jury verdict. Supreme Court in Ramos says it now needs to be unanimous in favor of guilty. And especially in Louisiana, there's a ton of litigation now about whether that reverses the non-unanimous. It was 10-2 or 11-1. All of those convictions, are those going to be reversed? They haven't yet, and that fight continues to today.
Yeah. That issue by itself is going to have to be litigated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's all we have. We will share Mr. Lee's website and petition that you can sign, and do what you did last time, folks, for Mr. Burton. And hopefully we can help stop this execution. All right, guys. Well, you know what? I will see you, Colin, next week when we actually, no, we already recorded the first episode of the new season. I'll see you next week when we record episode two. And in the meantime, you know, you guys stay checked in, because every Thursday we will be doing our addendums. Send us your questions as you listen to every week's episode. We're going to be trying to answering that in, you know, in real time during our weekly addendums. And I'm excited to get you guys on this new journey, on this new case. All right, guys. I will not see you next week then. Bye. Have a good one.
Bye.
Hey, Undisclosed listeners. Before I roll through the credits, I've got a few quick notes. By now, most of you probably know about our Facebook community group. If you haven't joined yet, please go to facebook.com/groups/towardjustice and answer three simple questions and you're in. But seriously, answer the questions, because a bunch of you are still pending since you've only answered one or two. They're easy questions, I promise. In addition to engaging with us through the Facebook group, you can also leave us a voice note at speakpipe.com/undisclosed. We always check the messages, and so far, I think we've answered all of them. We also have a Patreon page with three different tiers of perks, the lowest one just being $1, which allows us to continue to do this work. Other tiers include bonus episodes, early access to merch, and even joining Rabia in a live true crime Zoom discussion. Just go to patreon.com/undisclosedpod. Now, onto the real credits. A huge shout out to Hannah McCarthy for audio production. Thank you to Patrick Cortez and Romero Marquez for our theme music. For anyone new here, you can engage with us online by going to Instagram or Facebook at Undisclosed Podcast. We're also on TikTok, YouTube, and X at Undisclosed Pod. Whether you're a new or returning listener, you can always check out our previous cases and bonus episodes by going to our website at undisclosedpod.com. If you would like to follow Colin and Rabia on social media, you can find Rabia at RabiaSquared2 on Instagram and Colin at EvidenceProf on Instagram, X, and Blue Sky. Thank you all for your continued support and for supporting all of our sponsors. Until next time.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.